next to the party.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 94 of the PDH Pod, the one and only Magic the Gathering podcast dedicated to the total exploration of the Pauper Commander format. We've got another very special guest on the show with us for the first time tonight to talk about brewing and playtesting process across multiple Pauper formats. But first, I am your host, Brad Drack V, and let's see what my co-hosts from the East Coast are up to. First up, Dave the Alcadron Vader. How was your week? How's your internet?
Internet is holding steady.
Holding steady. Good deal.
Week has been great. We'll see if the internet continues to hold steady. I'm recording in the middle of a pretty severe winter storm. I'm getting a bunch of texts that the internet and or power may or may not give up the ghost at some point tonight. So if y'all abruptly stop hearing from me,
that is why.
I'm probably still alive. I just can't talk to you.
And I know a question probably on all the listeners' lips and ears is, how's the immune system?
Also hanging in there. I've been feeling pretty good. Like, somehow I still have, like, a bit of a sore throat. But aside from that, I'm 100% functional. Like, I'm not, like, you know, low energy or, like, dragging or, like, fatigued. I'm just kind of scratchy in the throat area still. 2 weeks later.
Good deal. Yep. Well, you sound good.
Thank you.
I'm glad you could make it. All right. Next up is our resident PDH PhD, Liam. How are you doing this week? Or your past week, I guess.
I am having some severe imposter syndrome.
What?
I'm reading through some of these episode 100 questions, and Paul's questioning my credibility.
Damn it, Scarecrow.
Yeah. What is this? Of course it's real. Of course the PhD is real. Why would you ever question that?
We wouldn't put that out there for 100 episodes if it wasn't real. It's legit.
Exactly.
There was a intense vetting process when we started this podcast.
Yeah, I think it was Brad was involved, and he just like awarded it to me, and then it became official. So
and that was it. I mean, that's all it took. I mean, we have a microphone. We're on public airwaves. It is official.
Exactly. Yeah, get out of here with that.
I'm like no scientist, but that's exactly how it works.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just like the internet, if you read it, it's true. If you hear it on a podcast, it's got to be true.
Facts.
Do you honestly think we would just go out there and lie to people?
Mm-mm, no, I wouldn't want the lawsuits, honestly. All right. Well, as I mentioned, we do have a very special guest on tonight. And I guess since Dave and this guest spent a couple hours in the commentating booth together, they're best friends. So, Dave, why don't you take it away?
Yeah, I am very pleased to introduce to the show, for the very first time, my best friend, who mostly shares my name.
Ooh.
Right now you're wondering, is he named David or is he named Elk? He's kind of named both.
Named both.
Please welcome to the show, David, a.k.a. Ankylosaur, notable and famed PDH tournament grinder. Mm-hmm. Came to us from 60 Card Pauper, where he is, as far as I know, very successful. I was chatting him about this at Chicago for a while. Kind of makes me want to play Pauper and like talk to him about it constantly.
So fun.
Also, the famed star voice, author, camera crew, and editor of the YouTube channel Ankylosaur MTG, where if you really want a bunch of really, really smart takes about competitive things, this is where you want to go. Please do not listen to me. I bring Death Rattle Oni to competitive events, and I 0-5 them. Listen to Ankh on Ankylosaur MTG. He will tell you all about Oubliette and Counterspells and all the hot new decks from Sanctuary, which, spoilers, does not include Death Rattle Oni.
Does not include the 0-5s.
Weird. 27th place. Which was above last.
Not last.
Didn't make the cut somehow.
Yep.
Welcome, Ankylosaur.
Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to talk with you guys here. And actually, Death Rattle Oni, it did get a little bit of a shout out at the end of that video.
Oh!
Because I like that commander a lot. I've been trying to build it, and I was really excited that you actually brought it to an event. So
you were really excited at first, and then you watched how it did, and you were like, maybe I was super right to not bring this.
Thanks for playing that for me, Dave.
Yeah.
I'll confess, I didn't get to the end of that video. I saw that it was the hot new decks, and then I saw the tagline that was like, that got at least one win, and I was like, oh, man. Death Realm's not there.
Yeah. Should have stuck it out to the end. Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna go rewatch the whole thing.
Yep. You should. All right, before we get deeper into that, we got to do a little bit of housekeeping as usual. If you like the show and you like what we're doing here, consider supporting us over on Patreon at patreon.com/thePDHpod. By being a patron, you get access to the pre-show, which is usually, lately it's been right at about an hour of just casual talk, going over the show notes, prepping for the show, learning all about our new guest tonight. That was an excellent conversation. And you get access to the live episode, the actual episode before it goes live, along with the show notes, so you can figure out what we're talking about, follow along with that. And then you also get access to the PDH Pod Discord server, where you can chat with the crew, get help with your decks, all that sort of thing, all that good stuff. And then you can also support the show by picking up some custom gaming products. Currently, I think just play mats, but we're looking to expand that soon. Over on inkedgaming.com, you can go to the collections part of the site to artists, and then just search up the PDH Pod. We should be right there. And then if you want to leave us a little bit of a little message, I think up to about 90 seconds you have worth of audio to record over on speakpipe.com. You can hit us with some questions, comments, thoughts, suggestions, ideas, drunk messages, whatever you want to leave over there is fine. We'll probably play it on the show, so be warned about that. And then lastly, you can check out our YouTube channel and our Twitch channel. We're just the PDH Pod on both of those platforms. And the latter is where I stream Spelltable PDH every Saturday evening at about 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. So I think that keeps the house pretty well. Liam, what do you got for this week in Magic?
This week in Magic was actually pretty standard, pretty straightforward. We had a surprise story epilogue for OTJ that involved Jace and Vraska and their new adopted son, Loot. We have most of the spoilers for OTJ, OTP, Big, SPG, Round 3, I think. OTC is still to come for us, but for you, when you're listening to this, it'll be old news. It's over 24 hours old. You don't care anymore. You know, the common drop will have just happened like an hour ago. You know, it's not as big anymore, but they still do that Friday afternoon, or I guess early noon, early midday, something like that, drop of cards, where it's just kind of like cleanup of everything that didn't get spoiled on time or whatnot.
Yep.
A couple rares, a couple mythics, and there's still a decent chunk of commons. There just aren't as many. But yeah, so the set will be fully spoiled this time next week, so more on that next week. And we also got the statement on Trouble in Pairs with the, quote, artist, Faye Dalton.
I love that, the quote-unquote artist.
Yeah, quote-unquote artist, Faye Dalton. Wizards have said they have suspended work with that artist upon further investigation. So,
yep.
I think that tells us all we need to know.
Yep, short and sweet. It was like two sentences. Yeah.
Did you also know that this is like a $30 card?
Yes, I think that's a lot of the problem people are having with it is that it's not a cheap. It's not a bulk rare.
I didn't know that. I didn't know it was so expensive. Yeah, that's fascinating.
It is. It's seeing a lot of play everywhere.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Cool, short and sweet. Yep, our set review episode for Outlaws will be out, I guess, next Friday. We're going to be recording it a week from tonight, but it'll be out next Friday. And you can look forward to that. But now I guess we'll get on to the main topic. But before we get to the actual main topic, we have like a sub-main topic that we do with all of our guests. Dr. Professor Ankylosaur, do you want to give the listeners a bit of your history with MTG, like a little Magic resume, if you will, and then what ultimately brought you into creating the content you do and Pauper Commander?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have been playing Magic since I was a kid, back in like fourth edition. It was a long time ago. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
And I played pretty casually up through around Apocalypse. Took a long break for college, and when I came back, it was right around original Zendikar. So I've skipped like a block or two since then, but I've played pretty consistently again since like, what is that, 2009, 2010, something like that. And
did
as far
you,
as...
Oh,
yeah,
get,
go ahead.
did you get directly into Pauper when you came back, or?
So I was not originally. For a while, I was just drafting because that was what the LGS that I was going to. That was lots of really good limited players there. Did a little bit of that. This is also right around the time that the first Commander precons came out. So mm-hmm. I picked up a couple of those. I think it was the Mimeoplasm one and then the Zedru deck. And that was, you know, my first taste of what Commander was like. But I didn't get into Pauper itself, 60-card Pauper, until I was in grad school, which is, you know, I was just a grad student living off kind of a meager stipend and, like, a budget format based around all commons was really what I was looking for at the time. And, like, the gameplay is so good. I really love this. The power level feels perfect to me. The back and forth in Pauper is really great. And it's only getting better now with, like, the Pauper format panel and everything to keep it balanced.
Sure.
But, yeah, so it was a few years before I got into Pauper, but that became, like, my real Magic love for a while. And as far as, like, getting into Pauper EDH, I've always, and I mentioned this during the pre-show, if you want to join the Patreon and get access to that.
Yeah.
But I've always loved, like, these tiny community-built formats. Like, I love drafting, but, like, Cube, where somebody has taken the time to make their own environment and build a set for you to draft around. Like, that's something I really love. Pre-modern, which is cards from, like, 4th edition through Scourge. That's a 60-card constructed format. I'm into that. But
yeah, and that format's been picking up a lot of steam the last, I don't know, 12 months or so.
Yeah, yeah. There's still, like, little pockets of it. Like, I'm pretty close to Madison. I live outside Chicago. And mm-hmm. Madison, I know, is a big hub for it. There's some people out on the East Coast that have been playing it and getting really into it. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And the cool thing about pre-modern is that they allow the gold-bordered, like, world championship cards. Mm-hmm. So some of the more expensive reserve list cards, like Survival of the Fittest, you can find for a lot cheaper. So that's a cool little bonus for playing that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I was playing a lot of Pauper. I was playing some Commander. And then one day, some people showed up at my LGS with Pauper EDH decks. And I was like, why did this never occur to me before? You can put the two together. This yep. is awesome. So that was maybe last winter. And I played that a little bit casually, but I didn't get serious about it until RIW posted on their website the announcement that they were going to have a PDH 1K. And, mm-hmm. You know, I follow them because they do Pauper 60-card Pauper 1Ks a couple times of the year. And I'll make the drive out there from, you know, Chicago to the Detroit suburbs for that. But, like, you've got tiny community-run format. You're having a tournament with good prizes. It's within driving distance, and it's all commons. Like, that's all of the things that really do it for me.
So, ticks all the boxes.
Yeah. So I kind of threw myself into learning PDH for that. And I tested a whole bunch for that, both at the store and by myself, which we'll talk about a bit later, like my testing process.
And at that RIW event, you played Aranis Street Urchin, correct?
I did, yes.
How did you end up on that deck if you were essentially brand new to the format?
Yeah, so it was... Aranis is a little bit of a pet card of mine. I've mm-hmm. built Aranis Far Traveler. I've built Aranis Criminal Past. I have a number... And then I have, like, some Aranis decks in regular, like, full-powered Commander as well. And, like, I don't know. It's just a card that, for whatever reason, really speaks to me. So I sure. was sniff, pretty sniff sure.
Out. Sniff Out just got to him with the Scare Tiller hype.
Right. Yeah. He bought in high.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
which is the correct amount to buy in on Scare Tiller
sure.
hype.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
For sure. But I was pretty sure I was going to play an Aranis deck, but I tested everything. Just I you know, I found some different tier lists that people had made. Crash had one. There were a couple others. And I was just like, Well, I'll look at that. I'll look at the top fours from some of the tournaments that people have been playing, some, you know, make sure that I know all of the decks I might reasonably expect at a tournament. And I just jammed a bunch of games by myself. And Aranis kept doing well. Like, I was surprised that this deck that I had kind of thrown together, I hadn't seen too many other people playing it. And as I tested, I iterated a whole bunch, and the deck wound up being a lot different from the original version.
Yeah, for sure.
But I wouldn't say that I was in on Aranis like from day one. I was still open to like switching it up and playing other things, but like Aranis is really the deck that I had the most fun with and was doing pretty well in testing. So that's how I got there.
Did pretty well in practice too.
Yeah, not too bad. I was very pleasantly surprised that I was able to make top four of that tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a good showing. It was a fun tournament.
Yes. One of my Magic highlights from last year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
For me as well.
Yeah, it was a good time. And they haven't sort of announced the event for this year sometime in July. That's what we know so far. As of recording date, we know it's probably going to happen mid to late July.
No, is a strong word. We know that some of the organizers have started asking questions about about potential conflicts in mid July. That's where we're at.
There we go. That's a much better way to put it. Yep. They're asking if they would be in the way, basically, if they scheduled it then. And that was the last we heard.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, well, cool. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. After RIW, I didn't really know anybody at the time. Like, I didn't realize there was a PDH community at all. Like, there was a Reddit, there's Discords, there's, you know, people playing games online. Like, I wasn't really aware of any of that, but the community seemed really great, and the people that I talked to were really kind and inviting, and it was cool to see that people had really traveled from all over the country to be at this one, like, this one event in the, you know, outside Detroit of all places, and that made me really excited. I was really happy that there was a group of people that were all super into this as I had gotten super into it. So I don't know. I'd been thinking a little bit about doing content creation for a while, but there's a ton of really good 60 card pauper players who are much better at the game than I am, who already make videos. And there's a bazillion EDH content creators, but
yeah.
PDH, I felt like I could sort of find a niche where I wasn't really stepping on other people's toes and put out videos that were
like stepping on toes as much as it is just getting lost in the swarms of other similar content creators.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know. I wanted to make sure that I wasn't just going to rehash what other people had done.
Right.
And I'm also a bit of a Luddite. Like, I'm terrible with technology, and I want to feel like, but I want to get more comfortable with certain things, like video editing. So I thought making content would give me a good excuse to learn how to do some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I figured, like, you know, nobody was going to watch these videos. So if they wound up being, you know, just kind of slapped together the best I could do at the time, like, that would be okay. And I was going to learn and get better, you know, each video that I put out. And then people have actually been watching them, which has been really like humbling and surprising as well. So
yeah, your videos do very well.
Yeah. I don't know why that is. I am trying to,
it's because you're a professional.
Because you are hashtag professional.
Hashtag professional. Yeah. I've been trying to aim my videos more at people that are like trying to get into the format. And I think that's sort of where the format is growing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are people that are interested in, especially the competitive side, because that's what I know the best.
Sure.
I'm not you know, I've played some casual PDH, but like when I went to Chicago, I was like, I'm going to build a casual deck. I'm going to make sure that I have, you know, I'm not just like packing Gretchen and Vizcopa and stuff.
Right.
And the casual deck I built was Seasinger. And I was just like,
that.
Amazing.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to steal all of your stuff and sacrifice it. That's going to be casual.
That's casual. Sure.
Fallen Empires.
Fallen Empires. That's even better than Homelands.
Right.
Yeah. So my my first foray into casual PDH was kind of a bust. I just felt bad playing the deck. I was like, oh no, I've become that guy at the table.
That's sort of like exactly my brother's experience as well. He got in and he was like, I'm gonna just mess around with this thing that weirdly is removal in the command zone. That seems powerful. Let's do casual games. And everyone was like, bro.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Can we tone it down a notch?
My first commander deck, when I was just like, I'll go through my binders, I'll find stuff that I have, things that sound like it would be fun to build, was Brago.
And
I didn't realize that Brago was like the most hated commander that probably exists. Just nobody likes playing against Brago, and I had no idea. I was just like, this seems fun. I'll blink all my stuff.
Hated is putting it too nicely.
Yeah, it might be.
Yeah.
In defense of all of that, I will share with you that my first ever EDH commander, when the person who explained the format to me told me the deck building rules, but he didn't tell me that it was meant to be a casual or a multiplayer format. So I thought it was 1v1 and competitive. So I built a Rakdos the Defiler land destruction deck.
Awesome.
And I made exactly zero friends that week at the local game store. And then I came back later with a very different deck and started to make friends. But like, yeah, these things look very appealing on the surface, and then you get into games with them, and you're like, oh, this is not the experience that I wanted to have.
Yeah.
That's not what I signed up for.
Yeah. For sure. So, yeah. I'm not sure exactly what to do with this Seasinger deck, but playing games with it is probably not what is on the docket.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Amazing.
Good stuff. All right. Well, thank you for that. Actually, recently, I spoke about our Discord server earlier. We had a pretty good conversation a while back about how to go about, or the various ways that people like to go about playtesting a deck, whether it's a brew or something you plan on taking into a competitive event. You kind of want to know how well it functions or, you know, for a lot of my decks, if it functions at all. So, you know, with Ankylosaur being on here and having a ton of 60-card Pauper knowledge and being a Pauper Commander tournament grinder, if you will, I don't know, we just thought this was like a perfect fit for him to come on and start talking to us about it. First up, I did have a question, though. What are some of your favorite archetypes and decks to play in 60-card Pauper specifically?
Yeah, I play a pretty wide range of decks in 60-card Pauper. Like, when I first got into Pauper, I wasn't really into Commander right then. I got into Commander a bit later. So I just traded away a bunch of EDH staples to my LGS and, like, bought the format.
Nice.
You know, it was just like, yeah, just Chainer's Edicts, all the artifact lands, you know, just everything, snuff outs, everything that I was missing.
Yep.
I just like, yeah, just give it to me. Here's some random enchantments I'm never going to use. So, yeah, so I like mixing things up a lot too. Like, both in PDH, like in tournaments, I usually bring a different deck, like depending on how I'm feeling. But I've played a bunch of different things. I've never been a player that becomes like a specialist in one deck and just kind of jams that week after week. I need the variety. But yeah. But yeah, all that said, at Magic on Chicago, I played in the Pauper Cup tournament, which was like 120 some odd people. Mm-hmm. I played Golgari Gardens, which is the mostly mono black control list, splash and green for Avenging Hunter.
Yep.
Yeah, a big fan of that. On paper, like snuff out feels like, yes. It runs the Colony Garden, so you can sacrifice the token to your Deadly Disputes and your Reckless, or not Reckless, Reckoner's Bargains.
Yeah, Bargains, like, and they make good Edict fodder.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. On paper, Snuff Out feels like it should be really well positioned, especially with all the Glitters deck running around. Mm-hmm. And like, it kind of got destroyed at the most recent Paupergeddon. Like that.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. Gardens was the most played deck, and it didn't put anybody into the top 16. Mm-hmm. But it feels like on paper, like all the removal should be really good against these people trying to suit up an Ornithopter or whatever. But
well, I think Familiars ended up taking down the whole thing, didn't it?
Blue White Familiars. It did. Yeah. Yeah.
What is Blue White?
Had
Familiars?
A really sweet one of. Oh, so it's sort of a flicker deck. They usually only run one flicker now, but you use Sunscape Familiar to make your spells cheaper. Now it mostly wins with either Moldrifter Beatdown or it'll stick a Murmuring Mystic. And then, you know, make a bunch of mana snapping stuff for one mana, untapping like your bounce lands and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Getting it back with Archaeomancer sometimes.
Yes.
That's some
value. Before the current iteration of the deck, the previous win con was all that flicker stuff that Ankh was talking about, plus Sage's Rodenizen, and you just mill out your opponent, basically.
Oh, yeah, that's the...
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it mills whenever they're in the...
But at its heart,
creature comes into play?
Yep, when another blue creature, mm-hmm. and you just go to Flicker Town. But yeah, basically, at its heart, it's just an Azorius Flicker sometimes combo deck.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it runs Godfarer's Faithful, so you can make Infinite Life with Archaeomancer and Ghostly Flicker.
Oh, but then you just add a Commander.
Right.
It's true.
Naturally, yes. Yeah, you do.
Mm-hmm. Yes, 60 card Commander damage.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't...
the cool thing about...
Isn't that why you run Avenging Hunter?
Go ahead.
Like Avenging Hunter just deals the Commander damage in the format, right? Like, that's the one you track? Am I misunderstanding 60 card popper?
No, I think you've got it figured out.
Perfect.
I think
perfect.
You got it. I think you nailed it. I think you found something no one else has.
I cracked the code.
Yeah. So, yeah, that the Familiar deck from Paupergeddon was really cool. It was running one of Aether Toe in the sideboard, which is a card I didn't realize existed.
Oh, yeah.
But 4 mana instant, put target attacking or blocking creature on top of its owner's library with Conspire. Mm-hmm. So, just... I don't know, several time walks in one. Yeah, that card seems really awesome. That was a cool fun of. But anyways, so I played Golgari Gardens at MagicCon Chicago. I made top 4 of the Pauper Cup, which was surprising and exciting.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
I also really like the Boros Gates deck in Pauper.
Oh, I love it. I love that
Where
deck.
You play a bunch of little guys like Sacred Cats or Squadron Hawks and use Basilisk Gate to make them enormous.
Yeah, you activate, you know, 2 or 3 Basilisk Gates and game over.
Yeah. Yeah, you can race really well because your Sacred Cats are gaining you like 10 life per swing or whatever.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Running Guardian of the Guild Pact, which can't be killed, basically.
Right.
And, but also can't be blocked in a lot of cases. So.
But it still benefits from the Basilisk Gate.
Oh, yep. That's dirty.
Tag synergy. Oh, yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Guardian of the Guild Pact is one of my favorite creatures in the format because I also like the black-white Pestilence decks. Mm-hmm. And if you stick a Guardian of the Guild Pact, your Pestilence never goes away.
Oh, yeah.
You just
control the game.
Yeah. Love that. Love a good Pestilence deck. That's one of my favorites. But, yeah, in the past, I've been a Burn player. I enjoy playing Elves a lot. I used to be on the Turbo Initiative train for a while, which is this Naya deck that uses the name sticker goblin for like huge ritual potential.
Yeah, yeah.
Mind goblin.
And then you try and stick in event.
Mind goblin.
Mind goblin, yeah. You try and stick in Avenging Hunter or Goliath Paladin as early as turn one and then just ride the Undercity to victory. It's
you just loop the trap and there you
go. They ban half the initiative cards because people were doing that in like black?
Yes.
Yeah,
amazing.
I think Avenging Hunter and Goliath Paladin are the only ones left.
What?
Is that right?
Yes.
The 2 5 mana ones are the only ones that survive. Yep.
That's it.
Yeah, those are the two. Trailblazer's Torch is also legal.
Oh yeah,
the torch
is there. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah,
but
because it was turn one, turn two initiative, and I'm just gonna trap you to death by turn 4 or 3 or whatever.
Yeah.
Incredible.
So, yep.
Yeah. So. I do like that Naya Turbo Initiative deck. It's kind of a glass cannon, but when it gets its busted draws, it's like one of the scariest decks in the format. Like,
yeah,
you know, drop like a couple goblins plus metamorphose into Avenging Hunter turn one, and it's like, I've got 9 power, I'm going to go to the forge next turn and make one of these goblins a 4/4 and hit you for 11. Like, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do, Chump?
Yeah. So.
And then after that, you go to the trap.
And then you trap him. Yeah.
And then you trap him. Yep. And then you trap him.
I love that deck.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Never played it, but I've seen it. I've seen the results and I've seen it played. It looks real fun.
Yeah.
I need to do more games.
I actually took that to the last RIW Pauper 1K. I took that deck.
How'd you do?
Very poorly.
Oh, no.
But, yeah.
You needed to provide more offerings to RNGesus before you showed up with that deck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I went to 3 games in, like, all of my matches.
Oh,
but
that's good.
It didn't quite work itself out, which,
yeah,
you know, that happens. Especially when you're playing a deck that mulligans as much as that deck does, because
you really need creature centric. It is sort of glass cannony.
Yeah, it's sort of like playing Bogles. If you don't have a slippery Bogle card in your opening hand, you got to mull.
You got to keep going.
This is also, you know, you got to have the rituals and the guy to make it happen, and it's just kind of rough. So
seems unreliable.
It totally is.
Really
it
entertaining.
Is, but again. Yeah, but when it works, oh man, does it work.
Oh yeah, it's super entertaining. Oh, cool. That's a wide range of decks. That's awesome. I was going to actually ask you if you had narrowed it down to a couple, are there any of those particular 60-card pauper decks that you are in love with or that you've done well with that you've tried to make work in PDH?
Yeah, I've played a few different like Golgari mid-rangey kind of control builds in PDH before. I have an Aranis Criminal Pass deck. As mm-hmm. I mentioned before, I do love Aranis. I think it's pretty good, though maybe not quite, like, maybe not even tier 2 competitive, but it's in that weird, like, high-powered space where it's probably not fun to play against at a more casual table, because it does run a bunch of Fleshbag Marauders and things like that, but it's also, like, not well-equipped to deal with some of the combo decks, so it's right in the middle of, like, I don't know. I've gotten wins with it at competitive tables, but also, like, what do I do with it?
Right. I think that's a lot of what Golgari does in our format, because my Spiritmonger deck's the same way. It's super powerful. It's almost oppressive at casual or not competitive tables, but it's just too slow, like, not enough for actual competitive.
Your introduction of this deck has brought up two questions that I would like to ask. First of them is... I've designed exactly one Aranis deck, and I ended up not putting it together because later I designed a deck that was, I felt, going to play very similarly, and I only wanted to build one, so I built the other one instead. But the Aranis deck I designed, also Golgari, I partnered her with Scion of Halaster. So my question is, how do you feel about common backgrounds in the command zone? Do you have strong opinions about this?
Ooh, good question.
I don't have strong opinions about it.
Totally fair answer.
Have you played with them in the command zone before?
I've only played Abdel Candlekeep Sage.
That's a good one.
Yeah, and that was testing for the Philly tournament, Riches Direct.
Yeah, tournament where they're legal.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't wind up going to that, but I thought I might. And if I was going to go, I sort of wanted to play Abdel Candlekeep because it's kind of busted.
You want to play the thing that you're not allowed to play anywhere else. Like, you want
absolutely
to see how it does there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Like you can't bring that to RIW.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So that's the only one that I've played, and I don't know. I could take it or leave it. Honestly, like, it's not a thing that if common backgrounds like became legal tomorrow, that would be cool to open up a bunch of different decks, but also, like, I don't know, I understand the reasoning why they're not legal, and I'm not gonna push one way or the other. So
totally fair. I respect that a lot. I didn't want this to turn into the conversation about that. I was just curious to hear your take.
Yes. Sure.
'Cause mostly just it's a thing that I, like, a year ago when I was arguing about it a lot, I was very convinced that a lot more people were on my side than there really were. So now I like when it kind of pops up in conversation or I think about it, I'll be like, what do you actually think? And like hearing people's honest responses is always very like, oh yeah, like people are not on my side as I thought they were. Okay, good. Good. That's good to know. We're going to file that away. We're going to, we're going to stay the course. Second question I had for you, you said when you described it, you thought about maybe it being like a tier two thing. What are your thoughts on tier lists? That's another sort of minor controversy we've had in the community with over the years.
Yeah.
How would you categorize various different tiers of competitive decks?
Well, now that I've opened that can of worms, maybe I have to walk that back a little bit.
We did it, boys. We got the gotcha moment.
We got
all right, pack it up.
Yeah.
We're done. Shut it down.
Yeah. It's hard because as I mentioned before, like the format's growing and it's still at a point where like there are decks that players have gravitated towards for tournaments, like the Malcolm Red decks, the Abdel Blue decks, Sir Conrad is having a moment, things like that. There are decks that people have recognized are powerful and have a good shot of doing well in tournaments, but that's also kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, you know, because these decks are things that the people who are playing competitively have identified as like the decks to play. Those are the decks people play, if that makes sense. So I don't actually know. All that to say is I think there's a lot more exploration that can be done in the format. And I think that the tiers, quote unquote, as they exist now, might be very shaken up if there were as many people playing PDH as there are like playing Modern, for instance. Like,
oh yeah, for sure.
Like go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, I was just saying like if you throw a lot more people at the format and bring so many more deck builders and like strong players into the format, people that are willing to experiment and like try out new things, I think the current conception of like what the best decks are, that might shift quite a bit.
I love everything about that entire answer. That was incredibly well put. And you have my support on all of those points. Thank you for this interlude. I'm gonna turn it back. I don't remember what we were talking about before I interrupted, but whatever it was, go back to talking about that.
All right.
Good sidebar.
We can do that. No. Excellent like questions. I don't know that I would have thought of those.
Hot takes with Ankh for a second.
Yeah.
Hot.
I mean,
right? hot takes with Ankh. Yeah.
I respect the show notes such as they are as a guide to what we're talking about.
Right.
But like, if we're gonna bring on like celebrities, I need the tea.
We got to spice it up a bit. Yeah, good call. Good call. Way to be looking out.
What were we talking about? Oh, decks that I've tried to make work in PDH that are sort of pauper.
Yeah, like strategies strategies that you really like in 60-card pauper. You're like, wonder if I could try that out, you know, expand that to 100-card single.
Yeah, yeah. So I did do a video on that where I was trying to bring some decks from 60-card into 100-card. And those... I wouldn't say that those are all like necessarily the most competitive decks, but you know, like Mono Black Control, I put together a list that has Grey Merchant of Asphodel as the commander because when you're playing in 60 card pauper, Gary is like the big finisher. It's one of those cards that you always kind of want to draw one of at some point in the game. So like, what if you just put it in the command zone and always have access to him? Like that seems
right.
That seems like a valid strategy.
It sure is.
Like Sir Conrad, I think is probably a better commander for if you're going to be like 100% competitive, Sir Conrad is probably the way to go. But Grey Merchant, I mean, it still gains you a ton of life and can help close out a game, especially with all the Grey Flickers. So I've done that. I built an Abomination of Llanowar deck, which also kind of, you know, runs a similar removal suite to the Golgari Gardens deck, has the Deadly Disputes to like sacrifice your Elvish Visionary or whatever to draw some cards. It has more of an elvish bent to it, of course, but I don't know. I sort of like Abomination of Llanowar. I think it's a strong Voltron-y sort of commander that just gets bigger as you play elves and like do your normal elf game plan. I also, and though these aren't legal in 60 card Pauper anymore, but I'm a big fan of the Peregrine Drake combos. And those are pretty easy to port over to PDH because you don't run into the problem of like taking a four of and dropping it down to a one of as much. Like PDH has so many Archaeomancer effects and you get both Ghostly Flicker and Displace and tutors for them like Drift of Phantasms or Merchant Scroll. So like you only have one Drake. And you can run Cloud of Fairies in High Tide, which does a similar thing. But like, there was a few months where I just kept building janky three color flicker decks, like Warden of the Eye for Jeskai. I built Lady Evangela as a Esper flicker deck. That wasn't very good. Lagrella the Magpie is a pretty solid Bant flicker commander, actually. Lagrella, not as many people play it just because the mana is a little bit awkward, but if you're looking...
Well, and they're probably tired of explaining the card to all the opponents.
Yes, that is
all the time.
Also a big part of it, I'm sure. Though, I don't know. Playing a commander that people aren't as familiar with, I think has some competitive benefit. There was...
Oh, I think so, for sure.
Yeah, there was at least one match at RIW where I was like, all right, I'm going to sacrifice a thing to Aranis and deal one damage to your creature. And they're like, okay, I have one damage marked on it. And I was like,
oh no.
No,
oh, sweetheart.
Yeah.
Sorry. Someone's got to tell him.
Yeah. So, but yeah, like that was a big benefit for me. Cause like, would my commander have resolved if they would have known that I could just death touch shoot down anything on their board? Maybe, maybe not.
Right.
Who knows? But it was too late at that point. So
I had one moment like that at Sanctuary where I pestilenced a couple times, and then I played the Death Rattle Oni, and one of my opponents was like, okay, like you have a 5/4 with flash because like the pestilence killed enough things that made it cheap and you should cast it. And I was like, oh, but it has another ability, my friend.
Yeah, there's a little bit more to that card.
You have to finish reading the card.
I wasn't done reading yet.
And I'm like, wait, everything? I was like, everything that was damaged by pestilence. And they're like, everything.
Everything.
Yep.
Yeah.
He killed everyone.
Yeah. I thought that, like, you know, by kind of keeping it secret, because I went into the whole tournament thinking that Death Rattle was this completely unknown card that no one had even, like, read before. And, like, so I was kind of expecting a couple of those interactions where I definitely took someone by surprise with what the card did. But like most of the games, everyone read it very carefully and they were like, oh, so your plan is pestilence. And I was like, nailed it in one. Like,
you've discovered
my entire deck.
Yeah.
I'm a lot more transparent than I thought. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes, when I'm brewing, cause I do like, there's one of the things that I enjoy most about PDH is like I've never felt like I'm a very strong 60 card Pauper brewer. Like there are a lot of, I don't know, it's a skill that I haven't quite figured out, like how to make a 60 card deck actually tick and function, and especially function at a level that can hang with the established archetypes. Like there are a lot of people in the Pauper community that are incredibly good players, incredibly good deck builders, and I usually just kind of defer to their knowledge. Like maybe I'll tweak a sideboard. Like
getting good with the Brazilians. That's all I can say.
Yes.
They literally have their finger. Like they, for the most part, I would say they make the MTGO meta.
Absolutely. Yeah. Whenever I've played Magic Online for several years now, and like I have a pretty robust Pauper collection on that platform as well.
Yeah.
And like whenever I play against like Carves, for instance, like one of those Brazilian one of those Brazilian players that I recognize by name, it's just like, oh man, like there's just no chance.
Constant trophy leader, like I'm in trouble.
But in any event, what was I talking about?
So there's nothing you've really found that you were like, I made Golgari Gardens work in PDH, or you know what I'm saying, like,
yeah,
where you're able to take almost a direct strategy from one to the other.
Yeah, it's
because I know I've tried. I've played plenty of Izzet decks and 60 card Pauper. Those are a little easier to make in PDH because there's just a million different blue and red spells that are cheap. But like, you know, you mentioned Guardian of the Guild Pact earlier. I used to play obviously a lot of 60 card Orzhov decks before Tithing Blade and all that stuff. And now whenever I make an Orzhov deck, Guardian of the Guild Pact goes in there. It's not four of, but it's going in every deck that I make, whether or not I play Pestilence, just because I know the strength of that card and I want to do those types of things.
Yeah.
It's just it's hard, especially in a color pair like Orzhov, where they are already sort of on the back foot, power level, speed, and then expanding in that out to 100 card singleton, where you have to take the good cards, but then you're really digging deep and sort of watering down the rest of the deck to make that strategy work.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of the question of like, how do you go from a format where you can run four of a card to a 100 card singleton format. And like, that can be tricky. And also like the commander is a huge part of commander, you know, like there's so many decks that just don't exist in 60 card Pauper. Like, you know, Vizcopa Guildmage, because that deck is all about Vizcopa Guildmage.
Right. We literally have no effects like that.
And, you know, there are some little analogs. Like Satyr Enchanter, I tend to run some of the hexproof, like, Bogle creatures in that deck. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some things that you can, if you squint and look at it, you know, like, yeah, that's inspired by that. But, like,
it's tolerable. Yeah.
It's also, like, as a multiplayer format, that changes so many things, too, because... you know, 60 card Pauper, you're going to run your cast downs, you're going to run your snuff outs. In PDH, those cards are still good and playable, but like you've got to deal with three different people. So I'll run like Gangrenous Zombies and Evankar's Justice and stuff like that, which don't really have as much of a home in 60 card Pauper anymore. But when you have a whole table worth of threats to manage, the sweepers and the things that like the Fleshbag Marauder effects, things like that, they go way up in value because you're using one card to deal with three people that way.
Right.
So I don't know. I try and figure out like if there are win cons that work that way in my colors too. Like I'm really high on pingers at the moment, like Thermo Alchemist, Firebrand Archer. Cause like, I don't know. It both gets around sort of the singleton nature of the format. Like there are a whole lot of redundant pingers, and it usually doesn't matter if you have a Kessig Flame Breather or a Firebrand Archer or a Blister Split Gremlin, like...
Or the Catapult.
Or the Catapult, or like, you know, there's so many different things that, like, if you have a Curiosity effect, it'll work just the same on any of those as, you know, they're pretty interchangeable. So, yeah, I don't know. I've moved off the Drake combos and onto the Pinger decks is basically where my brewing has been recently.
Yeah.
But, yeah, as far as making a 60 card deck into a 100 card deck, again, like if you can squint, you can see the influences, but there hasn't been one where I'm like, this is a direct port over to
direct analogy. There are some strategies, you know, like for the most part, obviously Bogles works, various types of burn decks work, mono black control is pretty close, those sort of things. But
I would love if there were like a wall combo deck. Like if there were some way to make the Axebane Guardian Freed from the Real deck into a PDH deck. Like it's just
I'm sure we can get close.
Yeah, I don't think there's only one real Axebane Guardian is the problem, and one Freed from the Real.
Well, so like, so Axebane is a defender which can be tutored.
Yes, there is a tutor for
multiple. What? Yeah,
yeah. And then and Drift of Phantasm gets either one of them.
Right. I'm sure there's a creature tutor that can get the Axebane.
Mm-hmm.
It's three mana. Yeah.
Yeah. There's the Shieldwall Sentinel. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that would go and grab it. But, anyways, yeah. It seems like at that point there are other combo decks that do the same sort of wall thing but better, and. Mm-hmm. That's disappointing because I love playing the wall deck in Pauper too. I think it's a lot of fun. So
Yeah, just the big splashy mana. We'll burn them out.
So then could you just run that in a deck as a secondary win con? I mean, it's Semic.
I think you could build it in, for sure.
Yeah. You'd need at least two defenders in play with Axebane Guardians. Well, Axebane and then another defender, so you'd have enough blue mana to make Freed from the Real go infinite. But yeah, there's probably a way. I'm sure somebody, now that I've said that, you guys are going to get all the comments about, like, well, actually, I've made an Axebane Guardian deck, and it's a lot of fun. So,
oh, yeah.
Thank you, friend.
The comment all again, right, is that I have seen Axebane Guardian combo off many times on the PAL stream because Jeremy made it as a joke. We call it the Roving Keep combo because the only, like, he uses Axebane Guardian to make infinite mana, but the only payoff for infinite mana in the deck is spending it 7 at a time on Roving Keep to give it +2 power. And it's the dreaded Roving Keep combo, and I've watched this man win a handful of games with a Roving Keep combo, and every time I type in the chat, where is the RC? We need a ban. RKC combo is too strong. I've never seen anyone competitive play Axebane, but I think it's got potential.
Yeah, yeah. And again, like, I'm speaking mostly from the competitive standpoint. That's almost all of my PDH knowledge at this point is from the competitive side of it.
Sure.
So
now you mentioned earlier, we'll move on to the sort of the next little bullet point here. You mentioned earlier, like, you know, you have trouble building decks or testing out decks and that sort of thing, original brews, if you will. How do you go about, like, you personally, like, how do you go about gauging your deck's success or effectiveness or speed or whatever you happen to be looking for at the time? Like, you can start with 60 card Pauper or Pauper Commander or both. I know when I used to play, and it kind of became a joke, like on the Common Knowledge podcast back in the day, Brandon had made a joke about the MTGO leagues and building brews. And he was basically, I took it as not a joke when he said it, but it kind of ended up being funny. But he was like, basically, you know, if your brew, if you take it into the free to play area, the tournament practice room, if you will, if your deck cannot beat Slivers, it's not ready for the leagues. Yep. Like, that was like, it kind of became a meme after that, but that was like a bar that I stuck with. Like, okay, I can't beat at least that tier or that type of deck, then I need to go back to the drawing board. Or do you do anything similar to that?
I think that's actually it's actually a pretty good testing metric. Like, Slivers, I had read somewhere that somebody had a play test, like a goldfish, not really a setup, but like a system that they would, like, every turn starting on turn two, they would pretend that their opponent had played a grizzly bear. And like, as you're playing your deck, just imagine every turn your opponent has a 2/2, and here's another 2/2, and here's another 2/2. And, like, can your deck deal with that? And Slivers is very similar to that, except the 2/2s become 3/3s and 4/4s and 5/6s, like, very quickly.
Right.
And I think that's, if you're expecting an aggressive meta, that's, like, not a bad deck to keep in mind, because yeah, like, can you deal with maybe getting run over by Slivers by turn six or whatever? Can your deck have enough removal and so forth? Usually when I play test 60 card Pauper, I do just kind of grab whatever lists have been performing well recently and play those card for card. And I'll play them in Magic Online leagues. I'll take them to my local game store, which does Pauper every Saturday. And you know, maybe I'll switch around a couple sideboard cards if I'm expecting a certain meta. Like, at MagicCon Chicago, I was running, like, four De Glamours and a Troublemaker Oof in my sideboard because I thought Affinity would be everywhere. And I was like, I need, you know, these five plus maybe some other cards for that matchup, because if, you know, Affinity was really popping off. But my main deck was exactly the Nick Norman is the name of the player, but his Golgari Gardens list that had won, like, I think two Magic Online challenges, like, before the event. He was having a lot of success with his list, and I was like, well, if he's having success with it in these tournaments that are, like, pretty big, and they are pretty much the standard for competitive Pauper, I'm just going to run that list. He's having a good time with it, so I'm going to give that a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my testing is basically running it through leagues. As far as PDH is concerned, though, it can be a bit more of a challenge to get, not necessarily to get games to fire, but like Pauper EDH games can go a long time. Like we've got 90-minute, 100-minute clocks in tournaments. So what I do is when I'm playtesting my PDH decks, I'll open a new browser window in my in Chrome. I'll open four tabs of Moxfield, one with whatever I'm trying to test, and then three decks that I would expect to see at a tournament. And then I'll just play a match by myself. It's sort of like goldfishing, but with extra counterplay.
Like goldfishing. It's like goldfishing four-dimensional chess.
So sort of. I think that way
that threat assessment sounds exhausting.
How do you politic with yourself?
Right?
Politics is a thing that you can't practice, and it's also one of the things that I'm the worst at in tournament.
Yeah, same here. Same here.
And I think that might actually be part of this testing process. Is like, I really wish there were a way for me to practice politics. And
like, if you're trying to make a deal with me at the table, and it doesn't include getting the initiative or the monarchy, I'm probably just gonna say no because I'm sure I don't understand it on some level.
Yeah. The thing with this though is like, not only do you get the counterplay, so it's sort of like imagining your opponent has a grizzly bear, except your opponent actually has like a Malcolm, or you know, has going off with Third Path Iconoclast. But you can also learn the rest of the format, and that was super important when I was testing for RIW, and like just throwing myself headfirst into PDH was like, you know, I've seen that the Malcolm Red decks have been putting up results. I've seen that Tatiova won a tournament and stuff. How does that deck actually work? Like, I can look at it on paper and like get sort of an idea, but like actually playing it out in a pod and learning the lines and learning what to look from both sides of the matchup as I'm testing Aranis or whatever, super, super important to get a feel for what is a very complex and diverse format. So
yeah, that was one of the hardest things for me going from 60 card to Pauper Commander, because like in 60 card Pauper, you build a brew or whatever, you goldfish it or you take it to the practice room or what have you, and it's like within a game or two, three at the most, you pretty much understand how the deck is, what changes need to be made. Because really, you know, when you're looking at, if you run 20 lands, you're looking at the possibility of only 8 unique cards in the rest of the deck, basically, you know, because it's so small, the four ofs. But then you take that to 100 card singleton and you throw a deck together, and the first two games, it's terrible. Like, you know, the first game, it's almost, dysfunctional. The second game is a little bit better, but you still, you know, lost first. You're the first out of the game. And then for some reason, in the third game you play it, you cleaned everybody's clocks. And you're like, I don't understand why this is happening. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it takes more than 3 or 4 games in Pauper Commander to really understand what your deck is doing.
Yeah.
At least in my experience.
Oh, absolutely. And it's just one of the things about playing Commander in general, I think, is like there's so much variance and there's so many things that can happen in a 4-player game. And like, you know, you need it becomes a numbers game at that point. Like, you need to have a lot of reps to even sort of know, like, is this deck, does it have potential? Like, is this a thing that I would feel comfortable, at least for me personally? Like, I like testing my decks, you know, playing a few pods on my own before I'll take it to the, you know, the LFG room in one of the servers, and, you know, just to make sure that I'm not going to embarrass myself or whatever if I'm playing against other people. Yeah.
Now, like Dave, I know you said you you kept your Death Rattle Oni deck a secret from everybody pretty much, but you were talking about how you play tested it quite a bit on your end. Like, how much did you go through to realize, like, okay, this is the final version I want to take to the tournament?
I play tested it. I did a lot of goldfishing with that list. Like, the weird thing, I wanted to do a lot of goldfishing because I wanted to make sure that, like, I'd built the deck around the idea of being able to hit, like, even the bad board wipes, like Psychotic Haze or Dry Spell. Just be able to hit one of those and then wipe the board with it with Tony. Mm-hmm. And but like, and I was running every single one of those that is in available in print, and I wanted to just make sure that it was enough that I would be able to reliably do that once or twice every game. And so I did a lot of playtesting that way, like figuring out how much card draw do I want, and like the other thing that I was like, you know, the other knobs I was turning a lot of were like the card, specifically the card Unwilling Ingredient. I would look at that card sometimes and be like, yes, this is exactly what the deck needs. And sometimes I'd look at it and be like, this is trash. Why? What are you doing? Because that, on some level, like if you want to hit the Psychotic Haze, which costs 4 mana, and then afterwards play a 7 mana commander, like you need the Psychotic Haze to be killing a significant number of 1-butts to make the commander cheap enough to play. And like, you can't always count on your opponents having a bunch of Llanowar Elves or Arbor Elves around.
Right, soldier tokens.
Sometimes you know, sometimes there's so many one butts that like Tony's just going to be free all day long. But like the Unwilling Ingredient, I was kind of on the fence. Like, is it important for me to have this 1-mana 1-butt that can try to get the initiative with a menace and then like replace itself after it dies to Tony? Like, do I need that? But the enormous challenge with trying to goldfish a control deck is that I wasn't doing David's like 4 tabs on Moxfield maneuver. I am not that smart. I cannot keep that many different things in mind. I would be incapable of doing the threat assessment in a fair way. Like, you know, no, seeing that the Malcolm deck had the Reckless Fireweaver in hand, I would be like, well, obviously everyone should attack them. But like, would that really happen in a game? I have no idea. So, I was like play testing this control deck to see if I could get like controlling enough draws. But it was really hard to gauge like what other people would be doing. Like I would sit there and be like, you know, okay, it's turn 5. There's a flesh bag in my hand. Is turn 5 when you flesh bag? Like, should I have done that on turn 3 and then not cast my commander? Like, figuring out like exactly when you need to deploy answers in a goldfish scenario with a deck that is 80% answer was weird. So like, yeah, I did a lot of goldfishing just to make sure that I was coming up with a lot of answers in sort of the right ratios. But like, the goldfishing was not very effective at the end of the day because I didn't know what I was answering. And like, being in the Clay referenced this quote in one of his videos a long time ago. Not a long time ago, a little while ago. No plan survives contact with the enemy. But I wanted to have a plan anyway. So like, yes, I did a lot of solo goldfishing. I had a plan. It did not survive contact with the enemy, but I was better prepared for picking up the pieces of my broken plan than I would have been if I hadn't playtested at all.
That's a really good way to put it. Yeah. Control decks, I think, for me at least, are the hardest to playtest. Because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Every turn one can be different. Every turn two can be different. Like, you have no idea. So I think being able to, like you said, like to be able to adapt and pick up the pieces of your broken plan, I think is a very, very good skill to have, basically.
Yeah, we try. It helps. Yeah. If you do a lot of playtesting, just so you know, like what should I be expecting to draw here? Like, what outs do I have for this particular problem? Like, that'll help you, even if it's not going to be a perfect practice goldfishing, but it is still very helpful. And yeah, I just did a lot of that.
Cool. What about you, Liam? You play test your decks a lot, or you just grip it and rip it?
Absolutely zero playtesting is done. No, not even
I love
the slight
YOLO
hint of, like,
swag money.
I'll put the list together and maybe I'll run it through a play tester once or twice just to make sure, you know, my 31 land count is actually okay. But like, really, the, you know, playtesting happens when I'm playing. That's, you know.
Yeah.
I'm playing the deck and testing it out. That's playtesting, right?
That is. You don't get any truer than that.
Yeah. I
won't even try to hide or mask that fact. There was absolutely zero playtesting. Not even a process.
I will say, like, there is no real substitute for playing against real people, but
yeah,
also
for sure.
playing a pod against yourself in Moxfield or whatever, like I do, it doesn't take anywhere near as long as a real game either. And like, your data is not going to be perfect because, yeah, you can see hands, but like, I try and be as honest with myself as possible and be like,
I mean, you're not going to take the results of those games and submit them to Clay.
Exactly. Exactly.
CPDH guy.
Yeah.
I've been doing it all wrong.
But,
oh man, crap.
But like, I try and make sure, like, I remind myself that I'm testing, and the whole point of testing is to see if the deck works. And if I'm like cheating myself by being like, oh, I can see that Malcolm's got the combo, let's make sure that I kill him. Like,
yeah, that's the hard part.
Yeah. I try and make sure that I want the decks that I'm practicing with to do well, but I also, if the deck is bad, it's going to show up so much more when I'm playing an actual pod than if I'm just goldfishing and like drawing by myself, playing against just nobody, you know? So,
yeah,
but I
can,
I can play a full pod by myself in like 10 or 15 minutes. It doesn't take all that long.
Wow.
That sounds like a good time, actually.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're more of a, kind of like the question I asked Dave, like how do you know when a deck that you've been playtesting, not a tier, a tier deck that someone else has established and you just put together, but like a deck that you mostly build or built from the ground up, and how do you know when that's like event ready? Is it just a feel thing? Are you more data driven? Like, what's that deciding factor? Are you just like, well, it's too late now? Like, that's usually how I am. You know, I'm like, well, I already registered it. I guess I got to roll with it. So,
yeah, I played a lot of games with Aranis before I took it to RIW. It was like in the 150s or something.
Oh wow, like actual games, not Ink times four.
No, it was like testing games, testing games like that. Okay. Some of those were actual pods at my LGS, but like it was a ton of practicing, and I kept a log as I was going through that. Like this was me like also trying to learn the format, so. I needed a lot more games and a lot more reps to figure out what I was doing than I have done for any tournament since then. But yeah, I was really enjoying playing that deck and testing it out against other things from the format. But I kept track of my win percentage and what was in the pods as I was playing. And Aranis had a good win rate, and I was like, this seems like something I would be willing to play. Also, decks with good win rates from that testing were Gretchen and Seder Enchanter, which were decks that I played in the two subsequent tournaments that I played in, just because I'd already had 40-ish games with Gretchen as well as I was testing Aranis, because that's how many times Gretchen wound up in the pod. So, So as I was learning the other decks, I got to figure out, like, oh, I understand why Gretchen is considered one of the best decks in the format, and I have a bunch of reps with it, so I'm pretty much tournament ready with that deck as well. So sort of data driven.
Not like super familiar with your opponents or what have you. You know, being as comfortable with a deck as possible is huge when going into an event like that.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, sort of data driven, but also, since then, for like the past few events, it's been a little bit more. I'm running a little bit more on vibes lately.
Just vibing. I like it.
But I guess a good example of that would be the deck that I've been fiddling with most recently. And I haven't played it against people yet. I've only been, you know, playing these four-player pods by myself. But that's Lorehold Apprentice, which is a deck I know that, Alec, you put it together a list. I think I saw that on Moxfield.
I do have a list. I've never considered it as anything even vaguely close to competitive. Mm-hmm. Like my deck loses every casual game I bring it to, like badly.
Yeah. I noticed as I was looking for other people that had built Lorehold Apprentice, I noticed that you had put a list together, and I was like, oh, that's cool.
It's true.
Yeah, but I'm high on pingers lately, so I like threw all the pingers in there. Plus, I threw some random spirits that I thought would be pretty good just by themselves, like Kamiya False Hope. That's like a reasonable thing to play in a Boros deck.
Sure.
What if you also turned that into a pinger? And what if you ran a bunch of cantrips because you don't have any curiosity effects? What if you ran a bunch of cantrips? Is that a thing? And so it's been having a little bit of success in the pods that I've been playing it against. But again, I'm probably going to need to run another dozen or 15 games before I get to the point where I'll be like, yeah, I feel confident in this deck. I would start playing against other people, or I would start playing it in a tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I just get obsessed with decks sometimes as I'm testing them. And it's like, I really just, all I want to do is play this deck and see how it performs. And that's maybe not the testing process that everybody wants to go through, but that's how I do it.
Yeah. I'm a lot the same way.
I love that.
Alec, I'll send you my Lorehold Apprentice list and we can.
Yeah. I will very happily check it out.
Yeah.
Now, when you tend to build, one more question, then we got something planned. Not necessarily a listener question later, but maybe something. When you build when you brew a new Pauper Commander deck, are you like a two-color guy? Are you, monocolor guy? Do you try to jam the three-color commanders we have? Like, where do you typically start, or do you even start with a commander? Do you start in the 99 and then just find a commander that fits later on?
Usually what happens is I'll be doing a Scryfall search for something, and something will spark. Either I'll see, like for Lorehold Apprentice, for instance, I didn't realize this card existed. I was taking a little bit of a break during Strixhaven,
mm-hmm.
and just... I saw it and I was like, I've been on this pinger kick. This is a card that turns things into pingers. How cool is that? You can shield to Velisvel and turn all of your things into pingers.
Right.
Like, what if, like, why has nobody tried this before? And I think that's a thing that drives a lot of my brewing is like, I'm a little bit of a hipster and like, I like playing things that other people have overlooked in the past, or like it,
sure,
and like some of it is like I'm still pretty new to the format, all things considered, and a lot of it is like maybe people have tried this out and it was a year and a half ago when I didn't know there was a PDH community and people have already decided this card is bad, but like I haven't decided this card is bad. I've never seen this card before. So, yep. I don't know. I'm always looking for strange angles to attack the meta from. And like...
Yeah, Scryfall's a hell of a drug. You can come up with a lot of interesting commanders. Just browsing. Like, sometimes I'll just like, rarity uncommon type creature and then just put in a random like keyword mm-hmm. and just see what comes up, or a random mechanic and see what comes up.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and part of it too is like I do draw a lot of inspiration from the other like really great players and deck builders in the community. Like Bobby Fine, Gator, I've played various versions of Ryan's Third Path Iconoclast deck that he just mm-hmm. won Sanctuary with, just because like it's a strong Is it deck, and it's also it's also on the pinger plan, but like it's a deck that people should know. I feel like if you're gonna go to a tournament, somebody's gonna have a Third Path Iconoclast list of some kind. It also a similar deck that was running the Drake combo won Riches to Rags.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And like I don't know, Third Path Iconoclast, I feel like that's a deck that I want to test against and want to know. So there are a lot of
not like it's going anywhere for a while.
Yes, definitely. But anyways, as I'm building new decks or testing decks, like or coming up with my own like quote-unquote new ideas, a lot of that will come from other people's ideas that they've already started with. Like the Lorehold Apprentice deck is like I've played against pinger decks so much and it's always felt like a deck or like a strategy that has a lot going for it right now. So mm-hmm. what if I try different versions of that? Bobby put together, Malcolm Breaches as a curious control pinger deck and has various, iterations of that deck and different commanders that are also doing like pinger Kyuris control things. And yep. I like playing with those. I like testing out that sort of idea a lot. So anyway.
Yeah, and the pingers are nice. They're nice and brewable because they're so cheap on the mana. They just fit anywhere. Like mm-hmm. if you have red mana, you can try them out in your deck, basically.
Yeah, they're cheap, and they hit everybody without having to worry about getting into combat.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah,
huge.
Just, you know, you're and usually just for casting spells you were going to cast anyways. Like,
right.
I was going to Lightning Bolt your commander anyways.
Stuff, so.
Yeah, I was right. going to Lightning Bolt your commander. I was going to, you know, Generous Gift that land that had all the enchantments on it. Like, I was going to do this stuff anyways, and now also take some damage on top of it, so.
Yeah. I was just going to Reckless Impulse, but why don't you go ahead and take a damage, too?
Exactly, yeah.
Great, thanks.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. Cool, awesome conversation. Dave, Liam, or I guess Alcadron, Liam, do you have anything else you want to get in on the playtesting?
Got to be careful who you're calling, Dave.
Yeah, got to specify.
And who you're calling, Halk, or
the Alk Ank Dave
enunciate.
David.
The last tournament you top four'd Ank, someone right after it happened, someone popped into the PDH Pod Discord server and started congratulating me on my performance, and I was like, "Hi."
Oh.
And they were like,
"Sorry, what?
You were just in the top four, right?" And I was like, "No, Ank was." And they were like, "Aren't you Ank?" I was like, "I'm Ank."
Close.
Yeah.
It's a good moment.
Yep.
If I had known what was going on, I absolutely would have taken credit for your accomplishments. I just didn't understand until it was too late.
Oh, caught it a minute too late.
Yeah.
Well, Liamasaur, do you have anything? Alcadronasaur, you got anything?
Nah, I got nothing. This has been very interesting to listen to.
Right on, right on. Do you have any final points you wanted to make, actual Ankylosaur, before we move on?
No, I don't think so. No, this was a great conversation. Thanks for having me on.
Cool. Yeah, no problem. We're actually going to we don't have any listener questions this week, so I took matters into my own hands and I decided to make a spur of the moment sort of on the spot pop quiz for everybody. I mean, we got
very exciting.
I don't know about Ankylosaur, but the other two are teachers. And, you know, between the three of you, there's like 82 degrees, like, you know, master's degrees and doctorates and all this other PhDs and whatever else we got on the show here. So you guys are smart fellas. I think we can get through this. What do you think? You want to play along, Ankylosaur?
Absolutely.
All right. I wanted to keep it kind of short, so I only came up with like five questions. There is two questions for everybody, for all three of you, and then a specific question for each one of you. So let's start with Liam. What do you think, Liam? You want to start us off?
Sounds great.
Okay. Should be pretty easy, but let's go. Can you name all three 0-mana kobolds that are pauper legal?
No.
No?
No.
Is the honest answer the correct answer?
I think there's kobolds of care keep token.
That's okay. One of them. Yeah.
Oh, that is one
kobolds
of
care keep is one of them.
That's a real one.
Yep.
Okay. Are we counting the token having a 0-mana value, or is that like that's a real one?
No, the token is named after an actual card.
Yes.
Yep.
It's okay. it's like the you know, there's a card that makes like Llanowar Elf tokens.
Are we talking about pauper EDH or 60 card?
It's legal in pauper formats.
Oh, there's Rogue.
They're all three of them.
But he's...
Oh, I see what you're saying. It's
legal. Checkmate, atheist.
Checkmate.
Oh, get wrecked.
How about legal and 60 card pauper then?
Okay. Then I can't name the other two because I definitely didn't even know I could name the first one.
Okay. So we got Kobold Occur Keep, Dave. Alcadron, Dave. What do you got? Can you name either one of the other two?
Crookshank and Crimson.
Bingo. You nailed it. You got them both. Hooray for Alcadronosaur.
Well, he had an advantage in the fact that he was already old when they came out, and
it's true.
I was -8. So...
He was already buying beer when they came out. I know.
I mean, like, in Michigan, the drinking age is about 6. So, yeah.
That checks out.
Yeah.
I'm doing the math in my head real quick. And my parents would have been high school and middle school respectively. So I feel like this isn't really fair.
Oh, so they probably wouldn't know either.
No.
All right. Let's move on to the question for all three of you. Now this one.
Do I buzz in? How do I?
Well, this one, you're each going to get a guess. And it's almost like Price is Right. The closest without going over is going to get, I don't know, all the points for this question, whatever the points are.
Sure.
How many mono white creature type soldiers are legal in Pauper? 60 card Pauper. Let's specify. So not command zone stuff.
So mono type as in just a soldier?
Mono white.
Oh, mono white. Okay.
They can have any other creature types, but mono white soldiers are legal.
But they're at least a soldier, greater than or equal to soldier.
Correct. Yes. Without using Scryfall.
Mono white, 60 card again. Not PDH.
Yep. Not counting the command zone shenanigans.
Okay. I'm gonna guess 123.
Okay. So, Al,
I'm going to
says
go
123.
234.
234. All right.
Without going over?
The closest without going over. That's right.
One.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
Somebody's watched The Price is Right before. I know that.
Maybe you've seen an episode or two.
Liam actually gets all the points for this one. The answer is 268.
Oh, wow.
Oh, shit.
There's a ton of soldiers.
There's a lot of soldiers.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
shit.
So Liam with the... I don't know, 1,000 points for that one.
There you go.
All right.
Awesome. I think it's 200 268 points for that one.
268 points, even better. Sounds more official that way.
Yeah.
All right, next up is for Ankylosaur. You ready?
Yes.
All right. What, I guess we'll specify, what 60-card Pauper Legal Instant has a mana cost of 2 colorless and a green and a kicker for a single black?
Strength of Night.
Oh, my God,
I know
you got
this
it.
One! Yes!
That's the zombie pump spell.
Excellent.
That's the zombie pump
spell. It's the zombie overrun!
Yeah.
The amazing zombie overrun.
One.
It's the reason my zombie deck is Sultai.
Yep. Yeah. And I don't know if there's any listeners that don't know, it's 2 and a green with a kicker of a single black. Creatures you control get +1/+1 till the end of turn. If you pay the kicker cost, zombies you control get an additional +2/+2.
Yeah, ain't no way I was ever going to get that question.
Was that one?
Showed up in Apocalypse and the List.
Yeah.
Yep.
You can currently pick up a foil for 45 cents.
That is a steal. I may have
that
to do that.
Steal. What a cool card.
Yeah.
All right. This next one is for Dave the Alcadronosaurus Vader.
That is my full legal name.
That is right. Sorry. I didn't mean to give that out on the public airwave.
No, that's cool.
Okay. Can you name all 5 colorless creatures that are legal in Pauper, 60 card Pauper, I guess, that have a mana value of exactly 8.
Ooh, maybe. Maelstrom Colossus.
Mm-hmm.
Ulamog's Crusher.
Yep, we got 2.
Eldrazi Devastator.
Yep. Well, it's Devastator, but I'll give it to you.
Jeremy from the Palace Bastionator.
Oh, that's right. We're at 3.
What is he naming? All the colorless 8-drops?
Colorless 8-drop creatures.
Yep. There are 5 colorless 8-drops legal in 60-card Pauper, technically.
Is one of them Ruin Processor? Is that an 8-drop or a 7-drop?
That is not on the list.
That's not on the list.
I know the last one.
Ruin Processor is a 7-drop.
It's a 7-drop. So what are the other 8 drops? How many of them are in my Brynolyn plus Alana deck?
Nice. Trying to cite reference. I like it. I like it.
I'm just trying to imagine what they could be. Ebony Rhino is 7. The 2 Affinity for Artifact 4/4s are both 7.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And one of those is not Pauper legal.
No, they both are.
Both of those are Pauper
and
legal.
Sojourner's Companion.
60 card Pauper.
Oh, is one of them banned? Oh,
yeah, Sojourner's.
Oh,
yeah.
I might be able to come up with the other 2 if you give me enough time, but I do not know them right now.
All right, what Liam, you got a guess on the other two?
Well, I thought so he named three of them already. He named the Devastator and Crusher, right?
Devastator, Crusher, and the Colossus.
Okay, so he named Colossus. Yeah. So the last one should just be Marut.
There's two more,
right? From CLB.
Marut.
I think that's it.
There's a fifth one.
There's
two Eldrazi,
one more.
CMR, and CLB. What's the last one?
Got any guesses? Ankylosaur.
I got the first three. Marut I had forgotten about. I could not tell you the last one.
The last one cost 8 colorless mana, but it has a green color identity. It is It of the Horrid Swarm.
I was thinking maybe that it was one of the Emerge things, or maybe it was one of the prototype guys. I was like, what are the prototype kids cost? Is it Rust Goliath? Rust Goliath is 10.
Yeah.
Depth Charge Colossus is 9.
That doesn't count. Okay, that's fine.
I was trying to remember the Emerge guys, and I couldn't come up with it. That's good.
Well, no, because I'm thinking of a Sphinx, where it's 2 Eldrazi and then one artifact creature from each Commander Legends set. So I knew Marut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Marut. Yep. Yeah, I thought Dave was going to get Marut for sure because of like Kalane.
I played it a bunch of decks. I just, in my mind, I don't process it as an 8 drop because it's.
It's free.
Yeah, it's a free. Right.
It's a 0 drop. I was thinking of cards that I pay 8 mana for, and it's not one of them.
All right, last one, sort of a question for everybody. I picked out 5 different uncommon creatures that can be in your command zone. I'm going to start reading off some stats without giving the name, and the first one to, I don't know, shout out the
buzz
name
in.
Of the... Yeah, the first one to buzz in with the correct answer gets the points. All right, we ready? Here's the first creature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is a 0/5. That's its power, toughness. It has a it has a mana value of 5. It's blue, mono blue. Oh, sorry. It is it. Color identity is it. So it's a 5 drop and is it. That's a 0/5.
It's not Test Pilot. It's not Staticaster.
It's an elemental with flying.
Oh, I know the name of this. I can't remember the name of this
Dragonauts?
Guy, but...
It's not Dragonauts.
It's not Dragonauts.
It's not Dragonauts.
It has an activated ability. For a hybrid, is it so blue or a single blue or a single red mana? Card name gets +1/-1 until the end of turn. And that's the entire card. Oh, I guess it came out in Eventide. That's the entire card without giving the name.
I have no idea.
I
can envision but I have no idea what its name is.
I was just using the Scryfall random function, so I wouldn't have picked this one out either. It is Talonrend.
Talonrend.
Nope, sure ain't gonna get that.
I can't even picture it.
It's all one word, Talonrend.
Oh, that thing.
That thing, yeah.
I haven't thought about that thing in about a decade. Cool.
Until tonight. All right,
tonight I learned.
Creature number 2. This is a little more modern creature. This has a mana value of 4.
Scare Tiller.
Two generic, a black and a blue, so it's a Dimir creature. Its power toughness is a 2/3.
Is it Crydal? No, Crydal's 2.
Crydal costs 2.
Crydal's 2. This also has flying, but it's a Specter.
Blizzard Specter?
You got it. Ding, 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 ding. Yep. 4 mana, 2/3 flying. When Blizzard Specter deals combat damage to a player, that player returns a permanent they controlled to their hand, or that player discards a card.
From Cold Snap.
Cold Snap, yeah, and then Iconic Masters. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Number 3. This one, here we go. Oh, this one's also a 4 mana value commander, but it's a 4/4. It's 2 colorless, a green, and a blue. This one's very modern. Let's see here. I wonder if the creature type would give it away too much. So it's 4 mana Simic commander. That's a 4/4. The creature type is Tyranid.
Lycanthrope. Not Lycanthrope. Venomthrope.
Nope.
Right? No, Venomthrope is the small one that with Death Touch and Hexproof.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the bigger one that makes things unblockable.
So whenever card name attacks, you put a +1/+1 counter on it and a +1/+1 counter on up to one other target attacking creature. That creature cannot be blocked.
Fred has this built, and I do not know the name.
What do you got, Ankylosaur? Anything?
I got nothing. No.
Trigon Prime is the name of the card.
Yeah, that sounds right. sounds I believe you.
Yeah.
Sorry, Fred. How you pronounce it?
Trygon
Prime. Trigon Prime, yeah.
Yep.
I've right. bet on that deck before while watching the Pals. Fred is very disappointed in me.
He is. Don't listen to this part, Fred. Rewind it and forget about it. Okay.
Yeah.
Number 4 creature out of 5. All right, this is a 3 mana commander. It's 2 generic and a white for a 2/2. It is an Angel Soldier with flying. And you can transform it.
Yeah, I got no idea.
Oh, is this the Phyrexian thing? Does it transforms into Fallen Angel, right? Where it's a 3/3 and you can sacrifice a creature to give it +1/+1 or +2/+1?
You got everything but the name.
Ah! It's from Capenna. No, I mean it's from March of Machines, it's Capenna flavored.
Oh, you're so close.
It has like New Capenna in its name too, doesn't it?
Yeah, the front half has New Capenna in its name. The back half has New Phyrexia in its name.
Guardian of New Capenna, Sentinel.
Oh, you're so close.
Watcher. What are synonyms of Sentinel?
It is Seraph.
Guardian of New
Seraph.
Seraph.
Seraph. Seraph of New Phyrexia. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I totally knew that one.
Yeah, four generic and a black. It transforms into that 3/3 that Dave told us about.
Yep. Yeah, good it's job. Just a Fallen Angel.
Yeah. All right, the last creature. And then we'll get out of here. This one is a 2 mana value, just a red and a white, not hybrid mana, just red and white. Cost you Boros to cast this thing.
10th District Legionnaire.
Close, maybe not. It's a 2/2 with flying.
Sky Terror. Vanguard.
Sky Terror.
I think Ankylosaur just got it. It is Sky Terror.
Yeah.
Sky Terror, nice.
Well, I think it's 10th District Legionnaire, so.
It has flying and menace.
It's a 2/2. Sky Knight Vanguard is the 1/2, isn't it? It just makes it a body every turn.
Yeah. Yep.
Sky Terror is the, yeah. Okay.
I gotta get the dinosaur card.
You gotta get the dinosaur.
Yep.
Those are the rules.
Yeah, Sky Knight Vanguard makes the soldier creature token. But yeah, Sky Terror, 2/2, 2 mana flying menace, dinosaur. It's pretty sweet. I don't know what you do with it, but it's pretty sweet.
Brad, do you accept feedback?
Yes.
This is awesome. I want to do this again.
Do you?
Yeah. I mean, like, not right now, but like.
Yeah.
do you accept feedback?
Yes.
That last one was definitely 10th District Legionnaire.
Oh, did I get the answer wrong? I'll have to recheck the teacher's edition.
I gave you an answer that matched all the information you had given me before you had given extra information. Therefore, my answer is correct.
I mean, if that's how the game works, then I feel like as soon as he says 4 mana, someone's just like, Maroi!
Done. I win.
Game over.
We'll send it to
the judges. We'll get back to you.
You got to like rattle it off real fast, right?
I see. Okay, I'll have to make some fine print on these rules, I guess. Yeah. Well, I think since Ankylosaur got the last one right, he just wins, right? I think.
Yeah,
that sounds right.
Sure that's how it works.
Oh, yeah.
Let me check the rules here.
Didn't?
Yeah, with 10,000 points, I think Ankylosaur wins.
Strength of Knight by itself is worth at least that many.
I think so. Sure. I love the card
for
so much.
Sure. Yeah.
Have you ever played Strength of Knight? Ankylosaur.
I have. And it is awesome. It feels so good to cast. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I can never like make it super work in 60 card popper, but the like two times I've been able to cast it in PDH has been pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Well, that was fun. It's a nice way to end the show.
Cool.
You guys have anything else you want to touch on before we get out of here? And then Ankylosaur, we'll get all your details and stuff here in a bit, and we'll put those down in the show details. But if you guys don't have anything else, I think we'll just hit the old outro.
I'm ready for an outro.
Sounds good to me.
Ready. All right, we just got a few more things before we wrap it up for the week. If you need more Pauper Commander talk or have any questions about the format, you can follow us on Instagram and X or Twitter, whatever you call it, whatever you want to call it. We're just the PDH Pod on both of those platforms. You can email the show at thepdhpod@gmail.com or head on over to the PDH Homebase's website. That'll take you right to their Discord server, and that's where you'll find pretty much the entire PDH community. You can find Liam and I on the aforementioned Twitter at Pauper Command and Pauper_B, respectively. And as always, you can find Dave as the Alcadron Asaurus just about everywhere else PDH is being talked about. I'll put all the links down in the show details. And then Dave, the Ankylosaur, where can all the listeners find you if they don't know?
Yeah, you can mostly find me on YouTube at AnkylosaurMTG. That's AnkylosaurMTG. Click on the link that I'm sure will appear in the show notes.
Yeah, it'll be in the show notes. It'll be in the episode details once it's up on the platforms. All that good stuff.
Yes.
Awesome. That's going to bring episode 94 of the PDH Pod to a close, but we got to give a big thanks to MTG Brad for letting us use their original music for the show. And from everyone in here to everyone out there, brew a deck, play some PDH, and we'll talk to you next week. Peace. Say bye, everybody.
Cheers.
Bye.
See ya. Oh, I love this so much. Oh, that's so dumb. Brought Pauper decks to the party. Pauper. I brought Pauper decks to the party.